So today I'm speaking with Jenny Kiesling, who's the lead faculty at Front Range Community College in Visual and Media Arts. And Jenny is originally from Chicago, has been in Fort Collins area
13 years,
and is a treasure to our community. So I'm going to ask you, Jenny, just a few questions. And you can tell us a little bit later about your background. But the idea here is to talk about how you see the relationship between your meditation practice and your work.
Okay. Just that sentence sounds to me as if there's a separation. You know, there's your practice and your work. And the first thing that I would say In the perfect scenario is that for me there is no separation. I really do consider my work in education as my practice. And I know that there is the reality of practice on your own, but I really think the role of being in the world is exactly what all of this is about. You have to be in the world. So it's one and the same for me.
And as a studio artist,
yes,
well.
Mm-hmm. That is also the same, meaning that the meditative, contemplative process of making work, honoring lineage in painting, because certainly there's a lineage in every discipline in the arts. And so, you know, I have my practice lineage, I have my art historical lineage, I have my family lineage, and all of that actually goes into my artwork, very much so. And certainly in terms of literally the technical quality of what I do, I'm very interested in the elements, the arrangement of the elements, and just even the action of perception in the studio. What we see, what we think we see, that sort of thing.
Well, I remember that piece of your work that was so amazing about the breath, that each stroke would be made with a breath.
That's true. I did a show at Naropa.
Yes, that was
actually
a show at Naropa.
Yeah, that was based on inhaling and exhaling.
Yes.
And that each mark, because the essence of art making, aside from perception, of course, is the making of the mark.
Itself.
And that mark making is also about our existence in space. And that the mark and the relationship of breathing, there's a point where there is something synonymous about that, where you're breathing and you make your mark. So each breath was an inhalation and an exhalation. So that would be one mark, inhale, exhale.
So then as an example, you know, just we're talking about here being Shambhala. So as an example in your work as an educator or as lead faculty member, how do you think your style, I guess it would be, or even how do you think your being or your manifestation as a being would be different than someone who perhaps did not have a practice?
I know that what I'm interested in bringing to a community college situation is some form of slowness, relaxation. Students, even in the last 10 years, students' lives are much, much different than they were 10 years ago. And to think of a student as the young person who comes in who is, you know, 18, going to school, maybe has a job, it's not like that anymore. The majority of my students are parents. Many of them are military. I have many older students as opposed to students that are just straight out of high school. And so the inherent chaos that is part of their lives comes into the classroom. And I have really the honor of teaching art, because being able to teach art is about teaching perception. And so I am so fortunate to sort of have folks who we can take a little bit of time and we can look at things slowly and we can examine them and we can also engage with the idea of how to be human through the things that we look at.
Mm.
Because it's art appreciation and many of the students' majors are not art, I feel the minimum experience that they can have in an 18-week period of time is gain some sort of idea of what it is to be human and take that into the world with them.
Wow.
And so when they're struggling with certain things, afraid to say things about what they're seeing, you know, what their perceptions are, very often I say to them, and it's always at the beginning of the semester, do not be afraid of who you are. And, you know, for me, that is something that after 13 years of practice, I feel as if I've grown up with that.
Mm.
But for some of those students, it is a revelation. And when I first started saying that, because obviously I believe it and I wanted them to think about that, I realized that there were many people that wasn't something that they actually had heard or had been told. And so I thought, well, if I'm starting there and I'm getting the positive response that I'm getting, well, there's certainly room for more. You know, mm-hmm. What are the things that I've come across in my practice over the last 13 years that actually fit into our daily classroom situation, which frankly is everything. Because All it is, you know, art is life, practice is life. It's just, it all actually is very interconnected. And it is seamless.
So you say, there's no separation.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Well, so, you know, you already have said some things about this question, but how does your experience at Front Range, or how do you at Front Range observe basic goodness in society?
Mm. Well, I'm lucky also because we have such a wide range of students. And so no matter what the situation is, and we have a wide variety of them, I think the first thing is sort of to honor whatever place that situation is coming from. Mm-hmm. Because there are a tremendous amount of stresses for a lot of the students,
mm-hmm.
and they are responding to that stress. And as someone who is now in a position that's administrative, I have this role of dealing with more students and more faculty and more scenarios that are outside of just the classroom and within an entire department.
So then from that point of view, what would be an example? I mean, what would be an example that you could give of just how sort of maybe one day you were struck by that, by the inherent goodness of whatever?
Oh, you know, I'm struck by it every day. I'm struck by the way the campus looks
mm-hmm.
when I walk into the building. And, you know, I've been walking into that building for 10 years. And the people that work there take such extraordinary care of the landscape. And the students, because we're students who are in the horticulture department, they take extraordinary care. And our public safety folks who walk through the building. And, you know, and that's the beauty of Front Range. I don't think for anyone there, it's just a job. There's something about their feeling. There's a love for that. There's an inherent love of that space. And interestingly enough, this came up in conversation yesterday, because we've received funding to continue our community-based art education program. And one of the things that I was so struck by, and this has happened in the last week, is I'm getting a lot of responses from students who graduated from our area and are now returning. And they all want to come back, and they want to teach.
Wow.
And they want to be in that space. And it's not about income, because we know artists don't make a lot of money, and certainly that's not the nature of a community college system. But they all want to carry on some sort of feeling, which I think, you know, basic goodness, you can't identify it, but you know it when you see it, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. There is this inherent feeling of wanting to carry on this very positive energy that they received as students, have gone into the world and identified it, and then brought it back. And so I'm getting calls from all these students that I knew years ago who are now leaving undergraduate school, and some leaving graduate school, saying, you know, I want to come back, and I want to try this project, and I want to try that project. And I think one of the reasons they come back is because both Carl Dukestein, who's the head of Creative Arts, Design, and Humanities, and myself, provide a very open space. No is not an option. It's more like, let's talk about this, because it sounds like it's very exciting. So there's a lot of ground there. It's very open. And let's see what happens. And from that, it seems so far that basic goodness just is. It's in that space.
It just arises.
And it arises, and I think that part of that comes from the fact, and I mean this in the best sense of the word, that there's no expectation. We do not have, I do not have an expectation of anyone who comes in. And as Pema Chodron says, you start where you are. So I have a wide variety of people who come to my office, and we start wherever they are. And sometimes they're really angry. There's no question. There are students that are dealing with issues that are just unbelievable. And so, you know, they sit in the chair, and either they give you the look, the thunderbolt look. You get that look, and I sit with that look, and we talk through it, or we sit silently.
You know what's interesting about that to me is it reminds me of teachers who say how stressful it is because as an elementary school mm-hmm. teacher, mm-hmm. for example, you have to be everything. You know, sometimes you have to provide food, sometimes you have to provide counseling, mm-hmm. sometimes you have to provide warm clothing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this day and age, you're more than a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you really are, you're just a central point in the lives of those people. But I never really thought about it
mm-hmm.
With respect to people who are going to college.
Oh,
so in
absolutely,
a way, you
yeah.
are, you're a much more important relationship than just somebody that they're going to class with or whatever. So I appreciate
yeah.
that.
Yeah, yeah.
So say something about your background in Shambhala, if you want. I mean, how you came to Shambhala or what, you know, where you are now or anything.
And it's interesting because this actually came up in a seminar that I was teaching. My students asked me, we were just sort of talking about our lives, how we got to where we were. And in Chicago at the School of the Art Institute, I taught a class called Ethical and Educational Issues in Community-Based Art Education. And because the majority of those students were from relatively affluent backgrounds and they wanted to work in community in Chicago, mm-hmm. as we know, mm-hmm. it's certainly not easy, even back then in the 90s when I was doing it. And I said to my students in one session, I said, it doesn't matter what you do, but whatever you do, have a religion. And I said, when I say, you know, like get religion, I don't mean organized, but have something that you will be able to rely on, because there are going to be days when you're working with a group of kids and you really connect with somebody on a Friday, and when you come back on Monday, they're dead. And how are you going to be in the world with that? How are you going to cope with that? And while I was talking about that, I was thinking about, I was reading Beginner's Mind So I started in Chicago.
Zen mind beginner's
mind. Yeah. I started in Chicago and just knew when I came to this part of the country, I was going to practice Buddhism. I didn't know what it, you know what I mean? I didn't know what, I did not know other than light reading I had done. And so I get to Cheyenne, Wyoming on October 31st. So this will be an anniversary.
Halloween, yeah.
October 31st. And I, within 3 weeks, look up Buddhist centers. I'm living in Cheyenne and see that there's one in Fort Collins. So I get in the car and I show up on a Wednesday night for sitting, and the center there had just opened. It had been open about a month.
On the one on LaPorte.
Yeah, LaPorte and Sunset, yeah. And that was my first experience.
So now,
and you know, 13 years later, here I am. That's not Andrew Mitchler, my husband, who I met at the center and I married. One of the things that he's always said about the Shambhala community is that it's very important, number one, because people need a place to sit. You know, beyond all of the teaching, they need a place to be.
Yes.
And that, at the most basic level, is what we can teach. Beyond that, it's a doorway. And it's a gateway to enter into the practice and study of Buddhism. And you don't always know where you're going to end up. So I ended up taking different routes within the practice and always considered myself within the Kagyu lineage, but in practice with other teachers. And, you know, ended up back right where I'm sitting now with every morning. This ties right into what I do. Every morning I leave the house, there's no question that the Sakyong is in my heart. Because I don't know how I would get through some of the days without his guidance.
Wow.
So, that's, you know, so sweet. You don't need the pictures. You don't, you know, he's sitting in the office with me, you know, and I think, and I really do. There are moments that are really challenging, and I think, whoa.
Let's see. Let's talk about a little bit more about your background, because I think that we haven't discussed that much because, you know, yes, you started at the Chicago Art Institute and community art in the Chicago area.
Yes.
And so, but so say a little bit more about that and about what's going on now at Front Range, because I think that's really what people might be interested in, and what you're doing now and how you want that to go forward.
I've had the opportunity to develop more community-based education programs in the spirit of what I did in Chicago. And Chicago at the time in the 90s was a great ground for creating that kind of programming. And so we did quite a few things there. And so I was able to modify that according to what the needs are in Fort Collins. And we have a program, we call it the Community Studio, which basically is free art programming in various locations throughout Fort Collins. The Murphy Center, which is a homeless transition center, is one of our locations where we've been for a year and a half.
And you're having an opening there soon?
We're having an opening Friday, November 1st.
Great.
And this will be our third exhibition with the Murphy Center. And it's from 4 to 7. And, you know, it's just open to the public. We've had actually great press. The artists who are part of the Murphy Center have sold their work, which is great. There's been wonderful press about them in the Coloradoan. So we look at that as a restorative arts practice opportunity, that people can engage in art and sort of work through some of the things they would like to work through there. We do art in the libraries. We're just finishing up a program at the Harmony Library. We've done art programs at the Fort Collins Museum of Art.
You were talking about, what did you call it, renegade art or something?
Because we have an art education department at Front Range, our art education students who are actually working at the Harmony Library this semester. We're going to expand that idea, and we're going to do some sort of renegade vagabond art program where organizations are welcome to sign up.
Troubadours.
Yes, absolutely. And we'll come in with our Tupperware containers filled with art materials. And, you know, we'll do art with whoever it is for 2 hours. So, you know, maybe it's the senior center.
Excellent.
You know, it can be wherever people are interested in having an experience like that for all ages.
There's the rehab hospital.
Absolutely, yeah. So that has a lot of potential for growth.
Well, so maybe one other question that would be good to hear about is how you're contributing to the Shambhala community now, because I know that you are. I always feel like you're a big contributor to our community. Do you have thoughts about that, or what you're thinking now?
Well, here's a little story. One day I'm teaching, and I didn't say everything is interconnected, which I often do say in my classes in relationship to art. Oh, I said art just is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very much about being in the moment. There's no such thing as good or bad art. And one of my students bursts out, which is, you know, fine. In my class, it's fine. How people says, what are you, a Shambhalian?
Are you serious?
Yes. And I said, well, funny you should ask. Actually, I am. And then, you know, we didn't continue the conversation in that sense. I think when he said that, because I felt that the rest of the class may not necessarily know what that was in reference to, I said, you know, I'm a practicing Buddhist. So they could make that connection. And so after, he says to me, oh, well, you know, I attend the Shambhala Center. I said, well, I've never seen you. You know, and he said, oh, well, I'm there. And he told me the programs that he's attended. And so what happens is, in the long run, a lot of the teaching that I've done, people begin to gravitate toward what their personal outcomes are. And they actually see the change in a 17-week period of time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sure. I've seen that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they wonder what that is. And if they really sincerely wonder what that is, and they kind of want to know what my pedagogy is, then I will tell them. So in that sense, people become aware of the Shambhala community that way. So in that sense, people have that understanding. But I don't think, you know, once people go to the center, that is vital in their lives. However, at this point in time, and I believe this is what we're being taught, you know, the center can be right in that classroom.
Mm.
It doesn't have to be at the center. And because of the times in which we live, it sometimes can't be the center. So say, for example, now that my job has changed, you know, you either have time or money, right? So there were times when I could spend more time at the center because I wasn't getting the income. And now that I'm having the income, I can't spend as much time at the center. So, and you know, what is my contribution? It wanes. There's an intern,
well,
you know.
I was
which
going
is
to
like,
say, that's
you know,
not really true because you're... Because hosting the Nintun, which is the longer practice sessions that we do one Sunday a month, is a really important thing because just like you were describing that you provide space for people to be who they are and to come and just take a leap and propose something, that's providing space for people to practice any part of that entire day, and if they wish to have some kind of an atmosphere or container that's like a more settled practice atmosphere. So
yeah, I think that I think what the bottom line of all of this is, we really particularly at this point in time, we have got to live our practice. Because if we don't, you know, this is the day of, which is kind of fun, because this is, you know, paraphrasing the Sakyong, but the days of, you know, sitting in the cave, we are being called to do something very different.
Yes.
We can't. I mean, we have to have our quiet time. We have to be able to practice. But now is the time to be out of the cave. And so hopefully I'm doing this every day. And so it may not necessarily appear as a Shambhala thing. However, the essence of the practice and the heart being the center of what we do is evident in what I'm doing in the world.
So perfect. So thank you for speaking with me. And
it's my pleasure.
And thank you for being Shambhala. I mean, this is being Shambhala is what you just described. So
well, yay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.